tap. WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King.
Summer's here, and so is our first heat wave of the year.
That may be the understatement of the year from New York City Mayor Eric Adams. It's 82 there now, but an extreme heat warning will go into effect tomorrow with temperatures in the high 90s and then past the 100-degree mark on Tuesday. If misery loves company, New Yorkers will have plenty of it. National Weather Service meteorologist Mark Chouinard.
Records are possible from portions of like Minnesota, so the Midwest, all the way into the Mid-Atlantic. On Monday alone, could be seeing over 50 records set, stretching from Chicago towards D.C., New York City included as well.
Parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin are recovering from last night's severe weather, but the hardest hit area was Enderlin, North Dakota, southwest of Fargo. Three people were killed there. Cass County Sheriff Jess Johnner says finding friends among badly damaged neighborhoods was tough on first responders.
The storm was still active when they responded, and it was very dangerous. And to come across the scene of people that they are familiar with is a difficult situation, especially when we have loss of life.
Two B-2 Spirit stealth bombers are on their way to Guam. Sources telling CBS News if they're needed for possible action in Iran, deployment from Guam would mean better operational security. The planes can each carry two so-called bunker buster bombs. The clock is running on 2 weeks that President Trump says it might take for him to decide on U.S. involvement in Israel's war with Iran. The BBC's Ione Wells has more from Jerusalem.
This is the first time Iran has updated the total number killed for 6 days. A spokesman for the health ministry said that 54 women and children and 5 healthcare workers were among those who had died in Israeli strikes, and added the majority of casualties were civilians. Iranian media also acknowledged that a 10th nuclear scientist had been killed. Israel also says it has assassinated 2 senior military commanders, including Saeed Izadi, who the country claims was instrumental in planning the October 7th Hamas attacks 2 years ago. It said he coordinated support between Iran and Palestinian armed groups.
Mahmoud Khalil says he will keep fighting for other ICE detainees a day after his release from a Louisiana detention center. Speaking in Newark, he's doubled down on his support for Gaza residents.
Free Palestine!
CBS's Lilia Luciano has more on his story.
Khalil was among the most visible figures at the pro-Palestinian demonstrations at Columbia University. He does not have a criminal record, but as his case got more attention, the Trump administration accused him of lying in his green card application, of being a Hamas sympathizer, and participating in anti-Semitic protests. But they never charged him with any crime.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shalia Pittman. The Wisconsin DNR is investigating a manure spill from Bruggen Dairy Farm in Monroe County. The spill killed hundreds of fish and contaminated healthy waters frequented by fishers. For more, here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
State officials are investigating a manure spill in Monroe County that polluted at least 8 miles of waterways in southwest Wisconsin, killing hundreds of fish and contaminating Spring Valley Creek, Moore Creek, and the Kickapoo River. A massive rain event triggered the runoff from Bruggen Dairy Farm, a 600-head dairy operation near Norwalk. Ben Uvas with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says the farm took measures to protect the soil, but the combination of intense rain and recent manure application caused it to spill into nearby water.
Very localized and a very high intensity rainfall event hit that field, and that was what moved manure off the field down into concentrated flow channels, grass waterways, and eventually off the field into Spring Valley Creek.
The spill was reported through an anonymous tip line to the Wisconsin DNR last month. Hundreds of fish were killed, including prized trout habitats. Farmers apply manure to their fields as fertilizer, but overapplication can cause risks for drinking water and local wildlife. The dairy operation treated about 130 acres of farmland with nearly 1,200 gallons of manure per acre, which is within the DNR's acceptable standards. There have been at least 9 documented manure spills in Wisconsin this year. year. A 2022 investigation found that more than 1,500 miles of waterways and 33 lakes in Wisconsin are impaired due to manure and commercial fertilizer pollution. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. This story was produced with original reporting from Nina Elkadi for Sentient.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Extreme heat warning through the weekend, a low only in the upper 70s tonight and mostly clear, hot, humid, hazy for tomorrow, highs in the mid-90s, heat index triple digits. Some storms on Monday, a little less humid as highs drop into the low 80s. It's 92 degrees right now.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend news headlines and also State Senator Kelda Royce. Will the Joint Finance Committee actually meet this week? She'll tell us. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for The Todd Alba Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. To start us off, we have Matt and Air on air. In this segment, they talk to retired Army Major General Randy Manner, who returns to the show to talk about the military parade, which took place last Saturday. He spoke about the opinion those serving has regarding being in the parades and how they are a drain on time, resources, money, and work. And he also gives his opinion on deploying the military to assist ICE. So stay tuned.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or you can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to be joined by a frequent guest of ours. And if you watch cable news, he has been all over the place on shows much bigger than ours. Retired Major General Randy Manner is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jane and Greg and Calvin. Good to see you all again.
Appreciate you making time for us. There are a lot of things going on. I wanted to start off with a little bit talking about the big parade on Saturday, marking the 250th birthday of the Army, also in conjunction with Donald Trump's 79th birthday. There were a lot of comments that I saw, Randy, about the lack of precision, I guess I would say, in the marching that was displayed. And there are some folks who think that that was deliberate, that that was a deliberate sign from our troops, maybe kind of a passive aggressive sign from our troops that they really didn't want to be there.
Okay. So first of all, I need to thank all the members, past and present, of the U.S. Army for celebrating 250 years of service to our nation. It's absolutely amazing that we have been able to sustain a heritage of service to our citizens and defending our country. And so my sincere thanks go out to every single soldier, past and present. And my thanks to all the soldiers that were in that parade. I need to tell all of your listeners, soldiers hate parades.
I bet.
I hate parades. When I was a lieutenant in the 82nd Airborne, which many of those soldiers were from, we did about 10 to 14,000 member pass and review, which is a huge monster parade. And it was very old school. And we practiced for days and days and days. And then uniforms had to be perfect. And you know, it's not what we do. And we all hated it. And it's horrible. So my heart goes out to all those soldiers that did it, and good for you for following your orders and for doing it. And I'm proud of you for doing that. At the same time, we hate parades. Mm. I've celebrated birthdays for the Army in combat zones. I've done it in the Pentagon. I've done it at Fort Bragg. I've done it literally all around the world. And the Army concept of a celebration of our birthday is we have a birthday cake, number one, or many, depending on the number of troops.
Sure.
We invite up the oldest member of the group, the youngest member. They cut the cake, not the colonel or the general or sergeant major. They cut the cake. We have brief, and I mean 3 or 4 minute speeches by a few people, the senior enlisted leader. We ask the junior person to speak. And we have cake, and we have like an hour break in the day, and we celebrate us, and we celebrate us.
Yeah.
And we tell stories, and it's very low key, but yet everyone appreciates the cake, you know. Unfortunately, that's not what happened here on Saturday.
What I'm hearing from you, sir, is you take an hour out of your day to celebrate the culture of the military and what you have done, because more than that, honestly, is a diversion of time, manpower, resources, and you got to get back to work and do the thing. Whereas this parade, and I share your feelings about this as far as them coming here to Washington and doing what they were told to do to celebrate. I get that. But that is a massive diversion of resources, time, manpower, projects that are not getting done, work that's not being done, all to the tune of tens of millions of dollars when you said perfectly, they don't want to be there.
Right. And Jane, answering your question specifically is that in contrast to the Russian parades, the North Korean parades, where you see everybody literally marching perfectly.
Yes.
Well, those are typically because they spend hundreds and hundreds. I mean, literally, we're talking hundreds, not tens, but hundreds and hundreds of hours practicing. Well, what are they doing? They're practicing marching.
Yeah.
Now, in the United States military, thank goodness those days that I was involved with as a lieutenant many decades ago are long gone. We don't march. The only people who train how to march are ceremonial units,
right,
like the 3rd Infantry Regiment out of Fort Myer for funerals and for state events. They've got to look sharp. Their uniforms have got to be super straight. And it's like, that's an honor for them to do what they do to represent the military with foreign dignitaries and for burials and so on. The average soldier, including me, we barely go left, right, left, right. So in answering your question, I don't think it was a deliberate act to say they were basically protesting silently. I don't think so. I really don't. That's too many people. It's unlikely. I think it's because we don't practice that.
Well, and I think you make an excellent, excellent point. Good heavens, they are trained to go to war. They are not trained to march in formation. They are not trained to look like a marching band. That's not what our troops are trained for. And it makes me think, Major General, that when we look at these troops in North Korea and Russia, you almost have to wonder if they have a unit that isn't specially devoted just to that.
Well, but remember, there are massive numbers of those soldiers that are in those parades. I mean, massive numbers. We had whatever it was, 6,000 or 7,000. They will have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 all marching with just as concise movements. It is a large, very large parade. And so you probably have seen memes all over the place with, you know, Putin and the leader of North Korea laughing at our soldiers and so on, and our tanks being, instead of it being 200 tanks, there's only like 50 tanks.
Right.
Well, the point is, our military trains for combat, and that is what we do, and we are excellent at it. And everybody in the world knows we're good at this. We're not trying to beat our chest. That's why we don't have parades like this.
Right.
We will see you on the battlefield. We're not going to see you on the parade field. So I don't think this was a silent protest. I think it's just indicative of the fact that, thank goodness, and I hope it never changes, we don't devote lots of time to practice marching.
Yeah. Sir, one of the things that we talked about last week, I think this parade is indicative of where the administration has gone, because we shouldn't forget that he wanted to do this in his first term, and the people around him, the guardrails, essentially,
yes,
whether it was military or just even in the White House, said, no, we can't do this. We shouldn't do this. It doesn't look good. I don't know if you were if you were still working at the time, but it shows just that the guardrails are gone. He can do whatever he wants, and everyone's going to say, yes, that's a wonderful idea. Let's have a parade. But also, was there any, in your experience, any president or anyone who said, maybe we should have a parade? That would be a good idea.
So it's important to look back in history. The United States has had military parades. Mm-hmm. It's like at the end of World War One, at the end of World War II, after Desert Storm. However, it was in the moment. It wasn't like, let's have a parade today.
Yeah.
And the idea that it was a 250th anniversary, yeah, whatever.
Right.
I mean, that's just not good enough. It's not worth spending all of that taxpayer money, your money, my money, and all your listeners' money to put that parade on. It was obvious, and it was sad.
It was,
quite frankly.
Yes.
All the empty bleachers. I mean, it was just absolutely feeding the egos of the people that were in those stands right there in front of the White House or the side of the White House. And it's just very, very unfortunate. It was an absolute inappropriate use of taxpayer money and of soldiers' time. I need to also comment, you know, I have stood in Red Square. I have stood in Tiananmen Square. I have stood in North Korea on the edge of the DMZ. I have seen the way that dictators use their military not only to, quite frankly, show their might on TV, but also, quite frankly, it's a threat to the people.
To their own people.
To show, hey, don't screw with us, yep, because these guys could be in your backyard tomorrow. Mm. And by the way, it happens all the time. And that is something where we must not ever allow this to be normalized. It is absolutely not right to have soldiers and Marines on the street of LA. I am appalled. The president has approved 700 additional people for Florida, Texas, and somewhere else. I just saw the press release, Texas, Florida, Louisiana, to help with ICE operations. We've got to get the military out of this business and turn it over to those that are trained to do this. It just appalls me. It is a misuse of, again, we need these scarce, highly trained resources to practice and do the things they need to do to protect the nation,
yes,
not to implement his policies internally in the United States.
If you're just joining us, retired Major General Randy Manner is our guest with the U.S. Army for more than 30 years, talking about all the many developments around the second Trump presidency. And going back to what you had said about Trump sending in troops into L.A. without the request of the governor, without the request of California's attorney general, the L.A. police chief, the L.A. mayor, no one requested this. And now I also saw this morning that they are planning on more ICE raids in blue cities. Now they're going to concentrate on blue cities. I can only imagine, Randy, that the troops have to be appalled by this duty.
So I have been talking with only a few dozen people in the Guard and in active duty. And it's important for your listeners to hear, while of course the exact details are still working their way through the court system, it is my opinion, these are probably legal orders. I mean, that's my opinion based on being the Vice Chief of the National Guard, the Acting Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau. And given that they're legal orders, the military is obligated to do it. Now, is it make it right? Well, of course not. Is it a gross misuse of a scarce resource? Absolutely it is. What we are seeing is two important things. One before I even say my two important things. I want to applaud the law enforcement of Los Angeles. They are doing a wonderful job keeping things under control. And this is, again, a law enforcement operation, not a military operation.
Right.
I say again to your listeners, this is a law enforcement operation, not a military operation. There is zero need for those military. There's zero need, especially Marines. If that's not using military to intimidate the local population, I've worked with Marines all over the world. Marines have one objective. Go kill that target. Okay, boss, I'm going to go kill that target. I'm going to knock it down. And they are they're best in the world at what they are trained to do. That does not make them qualified in any manner of any imagination to put them in with United States citizens literally feet apart. That's not right.
We're going to continue our conversation with retired Major General Randy Manner on the other side. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt and Air on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, the Tally's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Yeah, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We come back to the Civic Media Spotlight with Mino and the Mayor. In this segment, they welcome Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, to discuss Dairy Month, farm breakfasts, and the mental health challenges farmers face all around the state.
Hey, welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here. We're going to get back to Kevin Van Ness in just a few minutes, talk a little bit more about what they did last night and all these. Boy, the number one thing I think about when I see these forecasts are
outdoor beds,
weddings,
man.
And high school graduations. We have our guest on convoy?
Yes, we do.
All right. Okay, let's introduce Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, the Midwest Farm Report, coming your way on WGBW and WISS. June, of course, is Dairy Month and Mental Health Awareness Month. And welcome, Pam. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm doing well. Doing well, just like you guys, watching out to see what this weekend weather is going to look like.
Oh, boy.
Do you have any breakfasts on the farms this weekend coming up?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, let's face it, every weekend there's about 16. We're averaging about 16 dairy events on a Saturday or Sunday around the state. And we've got a brunch that's coming up on Saturday, and we've got a couple more that are on Sunday, kind of using the last gasp of June to try to get the people together. And I'll tell you what, I've brought this up before. If you are thinking about going to any June dairy event, go where the cows are, because there will be an incredible amount of energy. And I'm not just talking people, I'm talking technology that will be working this weekend to make sure those beautiful bovines are kept cool and comfortable. And you might be in a better spot if you go hustle and hang with the cows than worry about standing in line for the food.
Well, I told Jim about my son's high school graduation about 10 years ago now, and it was like the hottest day of the summer. It was like literally 94 degrees. We had a big tent, and one of the guests or whatever, our relatives said, "Hey, I'll bring in a farm fan." And I'm thinking, what are you going to do with a farm fan? That thing cooled off everybody. Everybody was completely comfortable by that one farm fan. I don't know. And it wasn't like it's one of these things that, you know, blows everything all over the place. It just really distributed air. What's the secret of those things, Pam?
Well, they have they run at quite a few RPMs, and they really do have to work through a lot of air. If you walk into a barn, I know that most people probably have, but pay attention to the ground, the floor. A veterinarian that I used to work with always said, if you can kind of see the barn lime, which is kind of the white substance we put down to absorb moisture, if you can see the barn lime kind of moving or the feeds kind of moving, that's the way you want your air circulating. You want enough CFM so that there's actually movement of those particles, because then you know the cows are comfortable.
Oh, interesting.
You know, you talk about those breakfasts on the farm, and you know, Johnny and I both done a ton of them, but the breakfast is really the small part of that. To go out and tour those farms, you talked about the technology, but there's so much to see out there. That is just it's a great event for anybody, but for families, it's especially great. And there's just so much out there. And I think sometimes people think these poor cows, but you know, they're treated pretty well.
And they've got their own routine.
Huh?
They've got their own routine.
Yeah. And the way they milk them now, some of it's so automated too. And it's just, it's a great thing. So
well,
you spend
that's, that. Like I said, they come first.
Yeah. Right. Which as it should be. So this weather, 90s, maybe even 100 this weekend? I mean, does that.
Right.
Tell me what are the farmers? I mean, do they rely on this farmer's almanac? Do they think our weather's good here?
No.
Take it away, Pat.
No. Farmer's almanac is a nice little conversation piece, but as far as reliability, I don't think that I know any farmers that plant by it or worry about it. But we do have a lot of technology that's telling us what's going on, and it's not just about the animals. We have to think about our crops. I mean, I farm in O'Connell County, and let me tell you, we could use a few more degree growing units, we call it. So heat is a wonderful thing in moderation, just like everything else. And what we've ended up being is a little on the cool side for the month of June. So our soybeans, our corn is a little bit behind where we'd like it to be. Now people say, oh, well, great. The farmers will love it this weekend. No. Nobody likes 90 plus in Wisconsin with the humidity it brings. A corn plant, for example, will basically start to shut down when you get into the mid and upper 80s. It's doing that to conserve moisture. It doesn't know when the next rain is coming. So it'll take advantage of the heat up into a certain point, and then you'll see it close down. And I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening that say, oh, yeah, you know, some of the ground is cracked where they haven't picked up the showers. That's a survival mechanism for that plant. So 90s are not what we're looking for. Nice, you know, a couple 80-degree days would help us catch up a lot. But 90s, the plant just cannot really maximize on all that excessive heat. So it basically goes into survival.
I did not know that.
No, me then. Khan's our expert golfer, and he's with you guys. He's right, the 80s versus the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when you drive past a field, if you drive past the field and you're just glancing out your car window, truck window, if you ever see corn plants, they start to wrap. The leaves will start to kind of wrap into a swirl. That's a survival mechanism, doing what it can to keep the moisture in the plant. Wow. So when we see the plants start to wrap, that's a sign that too hot.
Too hot.
Hey, I would have thought just the opposite. I would have thought, this is great. We got some water now. Hotter the better. I just learned something.
Is that true that corn, right? Did you say if it's not knee-high by the 4th of July, it's going to die? Is that true, or is that just one of those things we grew up with?
No, that's another one of those. It's a nice reference point. I think most farmers hope to heck that their corn's knee high by 4th of July. It's kind of a visual benchmark that you can use.
Yes.
And it's not so much about that point in time, but come on, guys, you're in Green Bay. You know, we start thinking right after 4th of July, then it's all of a sudden, you know, how much do we have left? When is that first frost? When is that first killing freeze? And that's really what a lot of farms have to start thinking about. okay, wow, which field is knee high by 4th of July? When are we going to start chopping silage? Which fields are farther along? Which are going to need a little bit more time? Which are we worried about that are really delayed and may not make it to first frost in the condition we want? So, you know, like I said, we worry about the weather when it comes to spring planting. Now we worry about the weather as far as plant advancement or making hay.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Weather maps are showing a lot of red and orange this weekend. CBS New York forecaster John Elliott.
Summer isn't even a day old, and over 100 million Americans under a heat advisory, watch, or warning, stretching from the northern plains all the way to the Gulf and into New England as well.
The clock is ticking on defining the U.S. role in the Israel-Iran war. CBS's Willie James Inman.
President Trump said he would decide whether or not to intervene in the Iran-Israel conflict within 2 weeks. The new timeline is seen as a last shot at diplomacy to get Iran to accept restrictions on its nuclear program.
She was crowned Miss Sweden in 1961. 5 years later, this shaving cream commercial made her a media star here.
Nothing takes it off like Noxzema medicated shave.
The New York Times says Gunilla Knutson died in February. Her death not reported until now. She was 84. CBS News Brief, I'm Peter King.
The Brewers win again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Brewers with a shutout win over the Minnesota Twins today at Target Field. Very hot day, temperatures in the 90s, 28,000 fans in attendance. The crew coming out on top 9-0. Jose Quintana, 6 innings pitched, allowing no runs, getting the W. The Brewers have racked up 30 hits the past 2 days with no home runs, but driving in on those runs last night, 17-6 was the final against the Twins at Target Field. The series wrapping up tomorrow in Minnesota. College football. Story making national headlines, the University of Wisconsin suing the University of Miami, formally accusing the Florida school of tampering with a football player under financial contract with the Badgers. According to attorneys, Wisconsin says that defensive back Xavier Lucas was under contract under an NIL agreement with the Badgers, and therefore the Hurricanes should not have been allowed to go after him. The lawsuit being watched by universities now. Keeping you up to date this Saturday afternoon with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Believe it or not, Hollywood is making a sequel. In this case, it is the fourth in a series of Meet the Parents films. The Hollywood Reporter says Owen Wilson has officially signed on to the project, joining Ben Stiller, Robert De Niro, Terry Polo, and newcomer to the cast, Ariana Grande. It's always nice to have a fresh face. Paramount Pictures is teaming up with Universal for the latest installment, which is co-written by John Hamburg, who also co-wrote the previous three films and will direct this new chapter. If you listen to Nightlight here on the Civic Media Radio Network, you've probably heard me talk about this franchise quite a bit, as it was started by frequent guest and writer Greg Liana, whose $50,000 independent film ended up at Universal Studios and is now one of the highest-grossing live-action comedy franchises ever. Meet the Parents is expected to hit theaters Thanksgiving of 2026. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Extreme heat warning through the weekend, a low only in the upper 70s tonight and mostly clear, hot, humid, hazy for tomorrow, highs in the mid-90s, heat index triple digits. Some storms on Monday, a little less humid as highs drop into the low 80s. Right now it's 93.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
When Republicans try to be cute, they always end up looking like Wile E. Coyote in the old cartoons. Governor Evers is the Roadrunner, and his veto pen is the Acme anvil that keeps getting dropped on their heads. If what they want to do over the next few weeks is not pass a state budget, it would be best for them to get one of those tiny cartoon umbrellas to guard against another Acme anvil that voters are going to drop on their heads.
Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, State Representative Francesca Hong on Republicans playing games with the state budget, plus Kristen Lierley, John and Gordy, and much more.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Up next on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show. In this segment, John and Gordy talk with Jesse Christensen from Cannabis DMP, exploring the safe use of cannabis products for ailments like sleep and anxiety. And he emphasizes the importance of transparency with his customers.
WMDX 92.7, John and Gordy in a beautiful morning.
It's gorgeous. We have sunshine, highs today getting into the low to mid 80s, and dew points are high. Humidity, it's muggy out there.
It is awful.
Maybe some showers and storms later. Okay, welcoming into our studios here, Jesse Christensen. He is with Cannabis DNP, and they have you have a website, cannabisdnp.com. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And the DNP stands for Doctor of Nursing.
Doctor of Nursing Practice, correct.
Yeah. Yep. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it.
A lot goes into this, your website, and we direct people over there to cannabisdnp.com, simple as that, and check it out. It's it does a lot to inform the individual about what you're into and how you have made this this product that you have. And that's what we want to kind of get into. You know, there's a lot of different points of view on what is available out there now. And there are a lot of shops that are dotting State Street and all the other avenues here in the city. So what is it that we're missing? A lot of people, you know, have kind of been brought up, you know, Gordy and I, of course, came from a generation of just, you know, buds and weed.
The flower.
The flower. Yeah. But, you know, things have changed so dramatically now because this is, you know, legal. Hemp. This is where a lot of this comes from, is hemp, and a lot of these stores have popped up. You got to fill us in, and you know what exactly, you know, introducing people to this industry, because there's still a lot of mystery surrounding it. We're seeing the shops, but we're not real familiar with what to expect when we go into these shops.
Sure.
Or go to your website and your product.
Yeah. Sure. So yeah, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of shops. There's a ton of products. As a matter of fact, I just got back from Chicago at the Champs Trade Show, where I got to see over like 2,000 vendors selling multiple different products. Yeah. So it's an interesting industry. I like to err on the side of caution, so I stick more with the medicinal components and not so much the bright and shiny, colorful products that are out there on the market right now. So I like to stick with the low dose.
So when you say medicinal products, what kind of products are we talking about? Are we gummies and
mine are taffies.
Taffy.
Yeah, not like the saltwater taffies. They're more dense, but they're also DEA registered hemp farms. That's where I get my hemp from. So I know that they're clean. They get tested for pretty much every pesticide, every metal. I have the chain of custody paperwork in case anybody wants to see it. And then I use FDA regulated CGMP compliant kitchens to make sure that there's an added layer of safety with the cleanliness of the product itself. And that kind of is what separates mine from a lot of products. Mine are very focused for a couple of different reasons. I work with sleep and pain and stress and anxiety. So I work with pretty much only two products as of right now. I'm formulating a few others, but I like to work more with the low dose, judicious amounts and dose products.
Mm-hmm. Now you have a doctorate in this.
I do. I got it last year, May, from UW-Madison. Never would have thought that that would ever have happened to me.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, there is a push to regulate the industry a little bit because there really aren't any regulations. No one saw this development happening.
Correct.
Because of the hemp product. Well, they wanted to grow hemp in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, everything just developed from there. And now people want some safeguards put up, some guardrails.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of basically what you're providing with your product.
So, yeah, working in the healthcare industry, I want to make sure that what I give to my clients and my customers is exactly what it is. I like to be very transparent. Again, that's part of healthcare, is being very transparent with your customers. Other people out there, they have a tendency to want to mock up their COAs, their certifications, and try to get the most dose THC out of it to make it seem very strong and very potent, because that's the tendency of what sells here in Madison, Wisconsin, and in Wisconsin in general, is people want the most potent product, the newest product. And that's one of the things that I like about Minnesota is with their rules and regulations. My products have been accepted up into the Minnesota market. That just kind of tells you what kind of product you're dealing with here in Wisconsin.
So in Wisconsin, what are the regulations?
There really are none.
Okay.
Yeah, there's
just
really,
as long as the hemp derived, the hemp that you receive is less than 0.3% THC.
Okay.
And then you can manipulate your products however you choose.
That's right. And what is Delta 9? THC.
So here in Wisconsin, we have to kind of specify the different deltas. The different THCs are like a family, 8, 9, and 10, and others.
Mm-hmm.
Delta 9 basically just, it tells you where the double structure is, the double bond is on the chemical structure. Mm-hmm. So let's say the Delta 8 would be over on this way, Delta 9 would be here, Delta 10 would be here. It just tells you where that double bond is on the chemical structure.
Mm-hmm. Does that determine what kind of product you make out of it, or what it treats necessarily?
Not so much what it treats, just what kind of product it is. So Delta 9, we know, is the major main component, psychoactive component of the cannabis plant.
Okay.
So it's the most abundant. Mm. Delta 8 is in the cannabis plant. It's just in such a low amount that to make a product from the plant itself would be extremely expensive. So what we do is, or what companies do is, they'll isomerize Delta 9 into Delta 8 with using different chemical.
Oh, okay. All right.
So Jesse, tell us about, now your medical background tends to focus on working with people that are 40 and older?
13 and over, but yeah, my sweet spot is about 40 and above. Yeah.
Okay. So they're probably customers of yours are coming to you for the first time, and what do you tell them as far as what, if they have an ailment, let's say they have arthritis or something, I mean, maybe there's a medical reason that they've heard that your products will help them.
Sure.
How do you guide them? What do you ask them and what do you recommend for them? If I have arthritis or I can't sleep at night, that kind of thing.
So the workup is kind of like it's personalized. Mm-hmm. Everybody is different. Everybody has their own medical background, medical history, medications that they're on, which a lot of people don't ask about. And if there's a concern for me, let's say you have a recent heart condition.
Yes.
Cannabis products may not be for you at this point in time.
Exactly.
But as soon as that becomes a more maintained, then we come back and revisit possible low dose, starting dose of like 1 milligram THC or CBD. But safety is always a concern. Transparency is always a concern. If I'm working with some patients with some mental health issues, I always ensure that they're talking with their psychiatrist or psychologist about any cannabinoid products. I give them my card. I'm very open about it. They can contact me at any time, but safety is a priority to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned a heart condition. There has been, of course, a study that's out there that said that
there's
a
many.
Lot of people who smoke
<There's many.
laughs> are more prone to have a heart attack. Now, what's the science on that?
So I think you're referring to the ACC paper, maybe the AHA paper. So the ACC paper that came out in 2025, I think in May. So there was a correlation, but they couldn't really determine a causation. And then when they were talking about their study, I believe they only used four key words when they were looking up all of the medical patients' histories. So they used the words cannabis, stroke, heart failure, and something else. Mm-hmm. So it was very skewed. The information, excuse me, was very skewed. Mm-hmm. So if you're only using those keywords, your numbers are going to be very high for those reasons. Now, if they would have added in some other things like tobacco use or BMI or other things like that, you can get a more well-rounded version. Mm-hmm. But because of it's news, it's in the headlines, mm-hmm. everybody's curious about it. And again, they're just promoting that same stigma from 1970 of be afraid of this. You don't have to be afraid of this if you're using it consciously. If you're using this for the right purpose with the right product. Now, it is shown that inhalation does increase your heart rate by about 8 beats per minute. Mm-hmm. It does increase your blood pressure a little bit, depending on your product that you're using. But over time, your body eventually becomes tolerant of that, and then it actually will drop your blood pressure depending on the product you're using.
So are you talking about inhalation of smoke, marijuana smoke, or are you talking about inhalation with vaping? Is there a difference?
There is a difference. Okay. So when I'm working with clients and they're not completely sure, and especially they have like an acute outburst of pain, the inhaled form is very quick. It's got a very quick onset, but it doesn't last as long as the oral or the ingestion route. So when we're talking about inhalation, what I like to choose is the vaporization method. It's the safest method. You don't combust the material, unlike smoking, let's say, a joint or a bowl of marijuana or cannabis. With that being said, the vaporization method also will increase your heart rate and your blood pressure, just because it's very acute. It's not a controlled.
Very sudden.
Yeah, it's very sudden.
Yeah.
Talking with Jesse Christensen from CannabisDNP.com. Do you have an actual retail location?
I don't, but
it's all online.
On my site, you can find all the locations my products are available.
Okay.
Well, I think that what surprised me looking at the locations is that you can pick up your product at Piggly Wiggly.
Really?
Sure.
Where's the is there a Piggly Wiggly in Madison?
Out in Sauk.
Out in Sauk.
Oh, Sauk, yeah, right on Highway 12.
Yeah, that's out in Bellevue, too, or Belleville, yeah.
So okay. There you go.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, so we talked about inhaled products. Well, okay, what about gummies versus, you're offering taffy now? I mean, is that about the safest route to go as far as any ill side effects?
So the oral route, the ingestion when you actually eat it, I like this method because it lasts longer and you don't need as much. Okay. The inhale version works great, especially if you have acute issues and you need something right away. Yeah. But when you actually eat the edible, it breaks down through the liver, similar to like a lot of oral medications, and then it gets in the bloodstream, which is about 4 times stronger than what it originally was. Mm-hmm. But it also lasts about 8 to 12 hours longer. So you get that full effect for a longer period of time.
Okay. And what are we treating sometimes when people want to take this? Is it the lack of sleep?
Sure.
The inability to sleep?
Sure.
Pain, aches and pains?
Yep. So my two products, the sleep and pain and the stress and anxiety, those are the major conditions that I see a lot of people for. And this happened even before I was had a doctorate. This was when I was working the floor as a bedside nurse from 2016 on to 2023. Mm-hmm. A lot of people come in for insomnia or pain. And I'm not a huge fan of opiates. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. But there is a place for them. It just should not be used long term. It should not be used chronically. Cannabinoids, on the other hand, can be used long term. There's no negative, horrible side effects like opioids do have. But yeah, sleep and pain and stress and anxiety are a couple of things that I treat. There's a couple of different forms of insomnia that I work with. And then we talk about dosing to help better help with that problem.
And this taffy, can you break it up? It seems like everybody is, you know, taking little chunks.
Yep.
One review said I took a quarter of it. So is it possible to do that or to break it up like that?
Absolutely. So you can either just take a little bite off of it or you can use a scissors and cut it. But each taffy is individually packaged within the packaging to help with shelf life, to help with longevity, and also to help with safety for little fingers getting into it.
And you would probably recommend, you know, trying a little to what your limit is and just add on to it if you need more.
Yep. Everybody has their own sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jesse, if people want to find out more, the best place is your website, right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
go to cannabisdnp.com. Yep.
And this Saturday, I'll be at Garver Sessions. I'll be there for the daytime and the PM. And then Sunday, I'll be back at the Northside Farmers Market, where I usually am every Sunday.
All right.
Very good.
Well, fantastic. This is great. Again, learning just a little bit about it really does help.
Good.
Appreciate you being with us, Jesse.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
We will be back with Leftovers on John and Gordy.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this, as Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
No more mold, no more damage, no more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass-treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app. Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
To finish off this Civic Media Spotlight, Chad Holmes chats with Robin Vargas of the Marathon County Public Library for a local update on the WXCO Morning Report during mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back. It's Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. And as we do every other week, we are very happy to welcome back across the table to talk about what's going on at the Marathon County Public Library with Robin Vargas. Robin, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
I said to you when you came in, what's happening? And you said, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot, yes.
Again, it's probably unfair to ask this, but is summertime as busy as it gets at the library, or is there a time of the year that's even busier?
I would say that this is it. Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely it, especially June and July. It feels like, although even August is pretty busy because a lot of other like the pools close down in early August and a lot of other activities wrap up by then. And so then folks are like, oh, where else do we go? Let's go to the library, of course.
That is the way to think. Absolutely. Let's get right into it. What are some of the early summer activities that you're getting underway?
Yeah, for sure. So later on today, actually, at George Street Park, we're having a garden story time. That's at 10:30 today with the North Central Wisconsin Master Gardeners. They're coming and doing some flower planting with the kids. So they'll get to take that home with them and, you know, get their hands in the dirt and get to experience that. Also in Rothschild tomorrow, Thursday, June 19th, we're doing Read to a Therapy Dog. So that's from 5:30 to 6:30. I've had some folks ask, it's not going to be back at WASA this year, but head on over to Rothschild. Mm-hmm. Just a quick, you know, 15-minute drive. So kids can head over there and do that tomorrow night.
Man, starting off in Rothschild is the place to be early on.
Apparently, yeah.
And that's, again, one of the aspects that's always interesting is that you have so many, you don't rely on just having folks involved here in WASA. It's a beautiful building, obviously, here in downtown WASA. But boy, you do take a lot of these activities straight to the people.
We sure do. We try to. We know it's hard, you know, if you've got four kids to pack them all up in a van and bring them down. So, yeah, we try and bring these events out to everyone that we can.
Are there any other, let's keep it with the, maybe some of the branches.
Yeah,
any other
absolutely.
Branch activities coming up?
Yeah, for sure. So on Thursday, June 19th, both in Marathon and Athens, we have animal acrobats. So it's going to be at the Marathon Elementary School at 10 a.m. and then at the Athens Community Hall at 1:30 p.m. And that's all about learning how different animals move, like how to identify their tracks. And then they're going to be bringing with them some live animals, like a bearded dragon and a snake. So if you're into that, I would not be. I would stay far away in the back, but kids can get the chance to see those up close.
I was thinking when you said animal acrobats, we're going to see some animals doing some backflips.
Maybe. I don't know. You'll have to go and see for yourself. I don't know. We'll see how well that bearded dragon is trained.
Let me ask you real quickly. When you have these activities, I mean, we think about sometimes library activities. Think about, books and maybe authors or stuff like that. How difficult is it when you have something like you're bringing animals in?
Yeah.
I mean, is that hard? Is it, or do you have a lot of folks that really help you out with that?
Yeah, I mean, we bring in these, performers that have experience, of course. But yeah, it definitely is a little bit outside of our scope. And so that is why we bring in some other friends to help us out with that. But yeah, it is a little bit different from the books aspect, but just another opportunity for kids to learn.
Fantastic. And we're talking to Robin Vargas from the Marathon County Public Library, as we do every other week here on 98.9 WXCO. Well, let's continue, because you said it's such a very busy time, and you got yourself a list here to talk about. What else is happening?
Yeah, so out at the branches, in Hatley, all week long you can go and make DIY paper beads. You can make those, string them up into necklaces or bracelets or any other kind of craft. So just stop in. And then next week out at the branches, we've got quite a few crafts happening. So in Athens, you can stop by and make a DIY kaleidoscope. In Mosinee, you can make some faux stained glass sun catchers. And then in Marathon City and Stratford, you can make a cute little paper snail craft.
Very cool. And something that's really, again, that kind of jumps out in when I talk to you and we hear about some of these activities, it's so important to keep children's minds active and to, not to let it just slide away, especially during the summer months. And all these kind of activities are vital for the development, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially like our reading challenges, we want to keep those kids reading during the summer and and also just develop a lifelong love for the library, get them in while they're young and get them hooked on books or the programs that we have and keep them coming back.
You said programs and they keep on coming. What else is happening?
Yeah. So let's see. Next week on Tuesday, June 24th, we've got the Rapture Education Group, Reggie. They're coming and doing some programs in Edgar and Mosinee called Winged Wonders. So about having different owls maybe and different birds of prey. So you can go learn all about that. That's going to be at Oak Street Park in Edgar at 10:30 and then at River Park in Mosinee at 1:30. Also in Hatley next week on Monday, they have zine making for teens. So teens can come on in and make their own zines. That is at 3 o'clock on Monday.
for us old people, that's magazines, right?
It is, yeah.
I know. It's like, no, but I chuckle because it's like, that must be something that's fun as well for you. I imagine seeing the kids and being and feeling that energy that that the kids have. I mean, that, you know, keep up to what is going on, because otherwise, you know, some of these stuff could fly over the head. But I imagine being around the kids a lot.
Yeah, we try and stay on top of it. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
We will have more with Robin Vargas from the Marathon County Public Library in just over 20 minutes at 7:52 during a local segment here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on 98.9 WXCO. Coming up next, it is the Farm Report. Get the latest on the farm news. And then after that, back to Pat. He will have his weekly homeroom segment coming up. That's in just a few minutes. Glad you could be with us here on this Hump Day Wednesday morning. With Ian Welsh, I'm Chad Holmes. It is Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app.
To learn more about these shows and all of the programming across the Civic Media Network, head over to civicmedia.us/shows to see the entire broadcast lineup. Follow the network on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, X, and Instagram.
You are listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. The clock is ticking on the 2 weeks that President Trump says might decide whether he gets the U.S. involved in Israel's war to destroy Iran's nuclear program. CBS News White House correspondent Willie James Inman says one new development may show Trump is prepared for it.
B-2 bombers departed Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri on Saturday en route to Guam, according to multiple U.S. officials. The stealth bombers are the only jets capable of carrying a massive bunker-busting bomb that could be used to strike Iran's Fordow underground nuclear facility. The movement of the jets does not confirm any decision has been made by the president. Mr. Trump is expected to meet with his national security team at the White House.
And he's headed back there now for that meeting. The BBC's David Harper says publicly, Iran's leader is digging in.
Iran's president, Masoud Pezeshkian, has insisted his country will never agree to